handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I am your host, J.L. Covan. It is 7:53 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, December 11th in the year of our Lord, 2021. That's right. They called J.L. the most inconsistent man in the game. Just literally trying to find whenever I can get time to do this in the next couple of weeks because there's a lot of travel. My day job is very busy. Just some personal family stuff that is time-consuming and mentally consuming as well. So, a busy December, tis the season. So I just thought, you know what, it's Saturday night, and like any successful comedian, I don't have a show or anything to do. I've got the Utah Jazz on background. Not on background like a journalist, like they're not speaking on the record. In the background. The Jazz on background would be very different than the Jazz in the background. Right now, the Jazz are in the background. I'm not doing any articles on them where I need off-the-record quotes. So, on background would be incorrect. Not even going there. Great to see, and once again, you Righteous Prick listeners now, great to see the Reagans in the news again. They were trending because yesterday it was like exposed to the wider world of Twitter that Nancy Reagan had a rep in old Hollywood, the original superhead, that was sort of her. She was like a bit level actress. Don't you feel bad for Nancy Reagan? How she could have monetized that today? Can you imagine little Nancy Reagan with her big bobblehead just walking around today all prim and proper and being like, if your man isn't a Hollywood actor, I ain't sucking his dick. Oh my God, Nancy. Like, what would be the reality shows for Nancy Reagan today? It's just funny. That was like a secret. And then, you know, Ronald Reagan, not to be confused with our Ron Reagan. Ronald Reagan, I mean, the Rick Perlstein quadrology on the rise of modern conservatism, which I strongly recommend, Before the Storm, about Barry Goldwater, the sort of architect of the ideology. And then the next few books, followed by Nixonland, followed by The Invisible Bridge, and concluded with Reaganland. I love those books. The four of them will probably take even a solid reader, 3 months to read. But great books. And among the things, I think it was the Kitty Kelly, like, unauthorized biography of Nancy Reagan that made all the sparks fly. But Rick Perlstein kind of alludes to this as well, that she was just known for her willingness, oral in the 30s was like anal in the 90s. I don't know. Does that seems to sound correct. I don't know. And the 30s is probably a little too old, maybe the 40s, I think she's. But she had that big bobblehead that probably, you know, Nancy Reagan, she was like 5'4" and like 3'9" of it was her bobblehead. So it was probably like just gave her a lot of force and a lot of, you know, but anyway, the point is, you know, then Ronald Reagan showed up like the dashing actor hero that he was. And, you know, she was ever loyal to, like, Ronald Reagan, not afraid of making a hoe a housewife. Yes! Yes! That is now the number one Ron Reagan impression quote of all time. And it, oh man, I think I should just George Costanza this episode and just stop recording right now. Because are we really going to peek at that? That is the greatest, most applicable, non-forced Ron Reagan Jr. quote impression I've ever done. Not afraid of making a hoe a housewife. Thanks, Dad. I always wanted a mom that all the old-timey actors would look at with erections. So Twitter just discovered that yesterday because Twitter doesn't read history. Twitter, I think of Twitter the way Chris Rock describes new pussy. New pussy can't read. Twitter can't read. Twitter doesn't know history. So it was like this big thing that everybody, and apparently her nickname on Twitter, rest in power, Nancy, first lady of the country, throat goat. That was trending on Twitter, which the irreverency of it is, I mean, Twitter, not afraid of burning in hell. So, I mean, it's really Ron Reagan Jr. Just this is the week he was made for. Shade at his parents and a lack of contrition or fear of the afterlife. So this episode's for you, Ron Reagan. The episode title, you guys will know. I'm giddy just thinking that when you see the episode title, not afraid of making a hoe a housewife, most people won't know. You guys will know. And that means a lot to me. My 700 to 1,000 regular listeners of this podcast will know. But yeah, that was the big story. But I guess I have positive news, even though a lot of other things are very negative right now. And I'm not even talking comedy. So I don't, it's stuff that I won't get into. But I'm not telling you what show. I've alluded to the fact that I am making my cable drama debut this coming soon. I can tell you that my episode will air in February of 2022. And I can tell you that, I'm not going to tell you the show, but if you watch the season 6 preview for the show Billions on Showtime, you may in fact see me twice in the preview. So I'm not telling you what show it is. I'm just telling you if you watch the 2-minute season 6 trailer for Billions on Showtime, you may see me twice. Which is pretty incredible considering I'm in the show for 5 minutes in one episode, but I managed to get into the trailer montage twice because it's a big performance I sort of had to give, or my character is big. Who knows what kind of performance I gave? I am rarely nervous with certain, this I am extremely nervous about because I don't, you know, I did the best I could. I got some laughs. I tried to go big. I tried to do, you know, be creative with what I thought I could do, but I don't know. Maybe it'll be cool. It might be cool. People might be like, I like that guy, like that scene stealing giant, or people might be like, that guy sucked, or people will say nothing, which is, I guess, probably most likely. But I think making the trailer twice, you know, per minute on screen for season 6, you know, 10 episodes or 12 episodes, I got 5 minutes out of, hypothetically, I'm not telling you I'm on. So basically what you have to do is not congratulate me on social media, unless it's privately. You know, but if you find it on your own, if you discover by watching the season 6 trailer of Billions and go, wait a second, was that who I think it was? Let me go back and check. And then you verify, I can't, I can't, I, what, I, that's it. I didn't do anything. They discovered it through their, you know, rabid fanhood and their strong review of social media content. What am I supposed to take down the trailer? Like they discovered it. So that's, I guess, the good news. So the good news is I'll be, hypothetically on one of Showtime's biggest shows ever, in kind of a nice little juicy guest role. I can't even say I'm proud of it, because I don't know how good or bad I am, but I'm very grateful. I'm extremely grateful, because if you think about it, folks, and I'll try not to veer into depressing shit because this is good news. If you think about it, this is the first industry tangible benefit that I've gotten from my rise to fame, because the creator of Billions was a supporter and fan of my work on Twitter and complimented me several times. And it was him who reached out to the casting agent to directly contact me. I didn't, you know, I had to submit a self-tape audition. So I won the part, but, there was no agent, no manager, like everything else. So this is the first thing that I've gotten that wasn't like cameos or my own production or my own earning money through YouTube or whatever. So it's a nice milestone. Now, you know, what I've been trying to do desperately is sell Half Blackface, with Showtime being my priority, being my number one choice, because obviously I have a slight in there. My goal, was to be able to get the special sold and possibly aired sometime within the season of Billions, hypothetically, if I'm on it, because then a publicist, when I hire a good publicist, they would be able to kind of turn that into a force multiplier. Like, what's the Trump impersonator been doing, you ask? A lot. And then it's all things that have nothing to do with me doing impressions, so that you create this, wow, he's really like, he made a special that's like dynamite and like turning heads, and also made his like drama acting debut on the very popular show Billions. So like now we're seeing somebody who still isn't repped, but is really flexing the diversity of his talent. I'm talking in fucking PR terms, but in truth, that is the pitch, and that is how I'd like to be pitched. But obviously, if Half Blackface fucking comes out in June, you know, it becomes like so much of my career where I get these isolated milestones that if somebody knew everything I've done, they'd be like, wow, this guy must be doing really well. And it's like, no, he spaced out every accomplishment far enough so that they never built momentum over his 20-year career before he walked in front of a bus. So that's good news, though. I know I'm slowly starting to turn it into bad news, but it's not bad. Like I said, If I see it and I'm like happy with my performance, I will be proud, but you know, that's on me. But the gratitude is sky high, needless to say, because how much time do I spend on this podcast? 96% complaining about the industry and my lack of opportunities. This was somebody who gave me a real shot to do something, you know, cool. Like there are actors who've been trained and working at their craft and deserve shots that would love to have this kind of a part as like, I'm not saying it's not like, oh, I'm co-starring. No, it's a guest role, but it's two scenes. It's big. So it's going to get you noticed. If it's good, it could be great. If it's bad, it could be horrible. But if it's like even just decent, it will be something kind of cool and fun. So, gratitude is definitely how I feel for that. I don't want to make this into a negative episode, and especially because the negative stuff is personal, not comedic, not anything that you usually hear me talk about. But it's very cool. So I actually don't know for sure I can say something, but the fact is I am in the trailer twice, so it would feel odd not to say like, like I can't say it, but if you've seen the trailer, then, you know, then you know. But very cool. So that's the good news. Trying to think what else. I didn't have a lot, so I'm going to try and not talk your ear off. By the way, one of the best recaps I've ever written. I of course, always enjoy chronicling in a humorous and honest way my travels and travails as a stand-up comedian. My Pittsburgh recap was a thing of beauty, in my opinion. I mean, from highest of highs humor, highest of highs sort of honesty and appraisals of my career. So, you know, just go, if you want to read something, you can go read that. Great meeting. If I kind of get the idea, especially when I see the discrepancy in numbers, unfortunately, that, you know, some Making Podcasts Great Again listeners definitely listen to this, so thank you. But a lot really just like the way I inhabit that universe. And once again, all support, any support, you know, especially if you're a Patreon person or if you've shelled out money for a cameo. It all matters to me, but obviously if you've put money behind me, then extra thanks. But it's a little frustrating sometimes because it's like this podcast conceivably could go on for another 20 years. God help us. But Making Podcasts Great Again, you know, I was kind of hoping to end it this year. And I told that to a fan who showed up in Pittsburgh and he was like, no. And I was like, well, maybe not. I mean, it is nice that people still like it. But I have, you know, a variety of frustrations with the show. And also, the longer I keep promoting it, you know, the more people will be validated. And, you know, I'll keep doing, you know, obviously if billions, hypothetically, if I'm on the show, gets me, you know, guest Emmy nomination and my special sells and gets me a Grammy and an Emmy nomination. Yeah, then I don't give a shit. I'll keep doing the stupid Trump podcast because now it just is a flex of like, oh, he's doing lots of big things in lots of platforms. But, you know, sink or swim, I am not just Trump. And a lot of people seem to have that perception. And, you know, I have other things that I want to promote, and I wish I could get more of those people to sort of want to hear and consume the content of the brain, the humor brain behind, you know, like, in other words, it would be like refusing to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm because you only like it when Larry David is writing with Jerry Seinfeld. You know, you'd be missing out on, yeah, like the Trump stuff is like my Seinfeld. But there's a brain, there's a comedic activity behind that, you know, and the rest of my career, I feel like, is the Curb Your Enthusiasm sort of stuff. I think that's a good enough analogy. So hopefully more people come on and give this podcast and, you know, other impressions, other videos and my stand-up albums and obviously Half Blackface. I know I can't imagine Making Podcasts Great Again fans won't consume that just even out of loyalty, let alone to watch a great special. But, you know, I'm hoping and I'm just hoping that the special can go somewhere, can get some love. And then, you know, then it's time to invest in a publicist and really see if I can break out of, you know, this, I don't want to call it a rut, but kind of like I still have yet to get where I think I should be. But obviously when I go to clubs and don't sell great, that doesn't help either. So, speaking of which, if you are a listener and you are in the Washington, D.C. area, December 16th to the 19th, the D.C. Improv, I'm in the lounge, but it's still the D.C. Improv and they're going to be great shows. Some high profile DC people I know for a fact will be in attendance at some of the shows. So get your tickets, DC, please. Much appreciated. You know, that is the first club I ever worked, the first club that ever paid me, 2004, the summer after I graduated law school. I went down there to host for Gary Owen, which is amazing when you think about it. Like, Gary Owen's been headlining for like basically the length of my comedy career, but he's not even 50 yet. So, yeah, it's a different journey for all of us, folks. Some of us have awesome journeys, and others are wandering the desert for 40 years. But it's all a beautiful time. It's not the destination of riches, fame, and happiness. It's the journey, right, of pain and suffering and despair. That's what it's really about. Anyway, showtime. Do I have anything to recommend? I started Gomorrah, and this book about the Naples like criminal syndicate that is now a successful, popular, well-regarded HBO series, formerly of Sundance Channel, and then Netflix streamed it for a couple seasons, and there were like all sorts of issues with the rights to the show, and then I guess HBO just whipped out their big black checkbook and and said, "We'll take it from here." Gomorrah, it's a little tough. I'm 60 pages in. I didn't do nearly the amount of reading I thought I would do in on my way to Pittsburgh because I was doing legal work on the train rides. Please read the Pittsburgh blog. It's a work of art. So it's a fun one. It's the most recent blog on my website. And also, I did a call of action. Here's my one complaint, my one fan complaint for the week. I had done about 5 weeks of calls to action for all my fans across platforms to please sign up for my monthly newsletter, even if you see this tweet or this post, because odds are you're going to miss a bunch of posts. Like the person who wrote on my YouTube page, "Come to Boston, please," when I was promoting like six different shows that weren't Boston. I was like, "I did come to Boston. I promoted the ever-loving shit out of my show in Boston. It went well, but you obviously ignored my cries for please sign up for the newsletter." So the point is, in five or six weeks of like, "I have a tour coming up, guys, you got to sign up for the newsletter, please." Even if you see this tweet, I'm telling you, if you're in one of these cities, you're going to want to sign up for the newsletter. Drum roll, please. How many people of my 100 and approximately 44,000, 45,000 people across social media that follow me, how many signed up for the newsletter in those 5 weeks of heavily promoting? A drum roll, please. 31. So the calls to action don't work. I don't know. It's just, I have to get so famous that, you know, if 15% of my fans respond, I need to have like 5 million fans so that it's a critical mass no matter what. Cause once you get to 15% of like 150,000, you're like, okay, well that's, I didn't embarrass myself. I made more than the minimum payout from Pittsburgh. So we're doing okay. But it's, I don't know if I'm being honest, which I usually am on this podcast, too honest. I don't know what kind of fans I attracted or what if people just wanted a distraction and they were able to like see that I had tons of talent, but didn't feel like that was worth becoming a real fan. Like, in other words, if he pops up on my phone, it makes me happy. And if he doesn't pop up on my phone, it's okay. I don't know how to cultivate. I just got the fans who liked my videos and then tried to convert those into people who watched YouTube videos because those pay, or people who listen to podcasts, which sort of worked more obviously for my other podcast, or come to shows, which has been like the biggest struggle of them all. And I clearly don't know how to make that conversion or something about the way I rose to fame or the way I approach comedy. But man, 31 people in 5 weeks is it's beyond disheartening. You just sort of go, okay, there's a comfort in sort of being, okay, it doesn't work. Whatever I'm doing doesn't work. And then the question is just what to do from that point. Like, once you've accepted that, okay, so most of your fans, either because of algorithms, aren't seeing your content, and the ones who do see it either don't want to sign up for your newsletter or don't believe you that the algorithm is fucking you, or generally don't care, but follow you for the occasional joke and the occasional video, which is fine. You're entitled to that. But it's just weird when it's like well under 1% of your fans are subscribed to your monthly newsletter where you tell them about upcoming shows and specials and events. That, like, that's what I can't kind of grasp, is that less than 1% of my fans want to be fans. So I don't know what the opposite of only fans, like anything but fans. I think, if it wasn't for Ron Reagan, that might be the title. Anything but fans feels like my fan support. And I'm not talking, you guys who listen to this are generally the most supportive. Like I'm not, like, this is me complaining to you about, like, mostly other people. But it is weird when it sort of dawns on me, like, so most of my fans don't want to do anything that resembles being a fan. Like, because I feel like signing up for a monthly newsletter, it's like, if, you know, on the except for the fact that I can tell you, like, I have comedians that I like. Gary Goldman, Bill Burr, for instance, are two comedians who I've seen live multiple times. But they're at a level where it's like, first of all, I became a fan of both before social media was a thing. So you just check somebody's website. And that's, and basically, trust me, if everybody was crashing my website looking for dates and buying albums, would I really care about how many signed up for my newsletter? No. But the newsletter is a good barometer, and it is, the measurement is bad, not great fan support. But it is what it is. And like that, it's not even about blaming it or being mad at any individual person. It's just like, how did I manage to do everything except get good comedy fans, like, who want to go see me live? Like, and yes, every time I post, you know, two people sign up for the newsletter and 97 say, when are you coming here? And I go, the best way to find out is to sign up for the newsletter. And the best way to get me in your city is, most likely I've contacted your city's club and they've ignored me. Maybe you should, and I never say this to somebody because I don't want to put people to work, but it's like, if you want me in your city, like, sometimes your club needs to know who I am or know that there are fans out there who want me in that city. But I don't know. You know, this started out as a celebration, obviously, of a show, but it's one of those things, and I wrote this in the blog, where I was just like, so I'm going to make a lot of money. I picked up a lot of followers on social media. I was written up in the national press. I just recorded a killer special, like a truly killer special, and I'm about to have a cool little guest role on a major cable show. So the only conclusion I can draw from that is I shouldn't quit my day job, which is so ironic and bizarre. It's like a weird reverse polarity. It's like, if you had told me all those things happened 2 years ago, if you told me all the things that were going to happen to me and you didn't tell me, like, the negatives, I would have been like, oh, so I'm probably, like, touring by 2022, like a legit 40 weekend tour, and maybe I'm auditioning for stuff, and I'm definitely repped. And I've got, like, you know, a few cities that I do really well in, like a Boston, a Philly, a DC. I'm definitely, like, selling out in advance. Like, if I have that big a following compared to what I had, and I got all this press coverage, and I'm now on, like, a big show for an episode, like, obviously the industry has taken notice and things are really happening. And that's obviously not at all the case. So it's just, I don't even know if I'm, I got too much other serious shit going on that is dwarfing whatever. That's why I maybe don't sound as despondent as I usually do. I mean, it's, the tone is still kind of bitter, but at this point it's just kind of an acceptance. And I go, but what, just for intellectual curiosity, how could I have approached this differently? Because I haven't even come within 50% of where I'd like to be in terms of ticket sales or interaction or anything like that. Like, so it just feels like, it never was going to happen. Like, somehow I've whatever. You guys don't want to hear all this droning on, but it eats at me because it's almost like I just wish I had an answer that could then make me go, oh, okay, so it was never going to happen. Okay, so like I need to cut loose now. I need to like just focus on my day job and like be like, okay, thank God I know. But whenever it's like confusing, you're just like, well, it's got to make sense at some point, right? Like, so I've got to be on the right path. It's just going to figure itself out, right? And it doesn't seem like it will. So fingers crossed for half blackface. That Showtime takes an interest in it. And if they don't, that's okay too, because I'll be on Showtime, allegedly, possibly, in February on an episode of Billions, maybe. But go check out the trailer, I guess. But other than that, I guess that's it, guys. The longer I talk, the more I'm going to turn this into one of those bitch sessions that some people like and some people turn off. So I don't want that. So, yeah, I got a bunch of gigs coming up. You guys know, but DC, Harrisburg, Chicago, San Jose, Burbank, and Salt Lake, just outside of Salt Lake City. And then, you know, after that, then it's knee surgery and recuperate. And by then, who knows, my special could be out or my career could be over. So fun. It's a real choose your own adventure book, isn't it? Go this way and your career inexplicably ends. Go this way and your career looks like it's going to be going really well, but also inexplicably ends. Not afraid of having two horrible choices. So thank you for listening. I'll post this up. I don't know. I'll probably post this early. Who gives a shit, right? But as always, thank you for listening. I don't know what I'm doing with this career anymore. Maybe that's why I'm not as angry. I'm more baffled at this point. And I'd, you know, fans come up to me at shows and they always say, I thought this was going to be packed. And it's weird. It's like, me too. I mean, not now, but like obviously when I started booking these gigs, I was like, oh, I should be selling a lot of tickets, but it's not happening. And each time I go on one of these trips, you know, it feels like I'm subjecting my hopes and dreams to a beating, and they eventually start to wear on you, and I don't want to do that. So, you know, hopefully I sell tickets to these other shows. But as I, you know, the one text I sent to the Righteous Girlfriend about 11 p.m. after the Pittsburgh show was, I only have to endure 6 more cities until this is over. So it might not be, but that's certainly how it felt in the moment. And that's no disrespect to the people who showed up in Pittsburgh. I deeply appreciate you. You were nice. You were supportive. You were effusive in your praise. You spent your money. You showed up. But unfortunately, it's on me. And I said this on stage to like as a joke, but I meant it. I was just like, you know, this is 90% on me. Like, this is awkward because I don't draw enough fans and I don't know how, but you know, you guys are here. I'm the one who's not drawing enough to make this a more festive atmosphere. So, you know, I always said I didn't want to be one of those comedians who just kind of limped to the end of their career and just got like the minimum amount of gigs and could just keep going. Like, because it always felt like those people were in the way. Like, hey, if you would just give up your four nights a week, maybe some other young buck could get in there who could do something with it. And I never wanted to be one of those. And that's why I was walking away. But then I got more famous than the average comedian. I got more money than the average comedian. I got more press coverage than the average comedian. And I was like, oh, shit. I did like all the big pot, most of the big podcasts and things. And I was like, oh, and now people are checking out everything else. So I felt like I was making moves, but obviously I wasn't. I don't know why it was this big illusion. That's what feels maybe cruel about it in a cosmic way, is it feels more like it was an illusion, which makes no sense because I got the goods to back it up. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sort of tired of trying to figure it out. So half blackface, Billions, day job. Right? I think that's the path we're on. So if you've supported me, thank you. Please check out those remaining 2 milestones and get tickets to see me in your city. The farewell tour, you know, this is most likely it. So thanks, guys. This started on a great Ron Reagan joke. Then we hit a peak with talk of billions. And then I fucking did what I always fucking do. So my apologies. Have a great week. Thank you as always for listening. Maybe I should take another 6 months off of this podcast. I don't know. We'll see. But most likely, I will see you next Tuesday.